So we come and think about this man who, as we've already seen, as we've already been reminded, was running away from God. That's not how the story ends, but that certainly seems to be how it starts. But let's have a look at the players. Because, as I said earlier, some of us will be familiar with the story. Some, at least after what we did earlier, will know something of it. But we're going to spend the next few weeks looking at it for the first time, looking at it again, and seeing something of what it tells us about God, about people, about obedience or not, about perspective. And in the first couple of verses, we're introduced to this character after whom the book is named, and we're also introduced to the place that is the focus of the story. Jonah was a prophet. He was one who was called to speak God's word to the people. And the only other reference that we have to him in the Old Testament is in 2 Kings chapter 14, where he's referred to as being sent to the king at the time and speaking God's word to the king. Jesus refers to Jonah on a couple of occasions, using this story as a warning to the people of his own day. And that's it. So most of what we know about Jonah is what we found written in this short book. Nineveh was the capital city of Assyria. And Assyria had been a major power in the known world over the preceding centuries. But at the time of Jonah, their influence was waning. They were becoming less important. A new king was going to come, and he was going to restore power and influence to Assyria. And in 733 BC, this story takes place a bit before that, in 733 BC, Assyria invaded the northern part of Israel and took some of its people away captives. They were not friends to Israel where Jonah lived. So one can understand his nervousness in going into this foreign land with all its oppressive history to people that would have been seen rightly as traditional enemies. But none of that is in view in God's calling of Jonah. God is simply looking at these people in Assyria and saying that they need to hear my word as a challenge to their wickedness. Whatever you think, Jonah. And so we get this sense right at the beginning is that these are people that God cares for and wants to restore. To get an idea of the geography, Jonah was from Gath-Hepher, so a bit near the Mediterranean coast. And he was supposed to go to Nineveh, right up here at the top. But instead, he gets on this boat and goes off towards Tarshish. And we don't actually know where Tarshish was. But it was a long way away. It was across the sea. Some people think it was as far away as Spain. He's going in the wrong direction, is what's happening. So we're just going to look at a few things that we find going on in this chapter. And the first thing we see as we look in this chapter and as we look through the whole book, we see that someone who is a prophet, somebody whose job is to speak God's word, he doesn't say much in this story. There are seven speeches in this book. And only one where he speaks prophetically, where he's standing up and saying, this is what God is saying. And we get that in chapter 3. And he says, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. And that's it in terms of being a prophet. But his words and his actions do raise some interesting questions. And we're going to look at the two things that he says in Jonah chapter 1 that Rachel read to us a few moments ago. And the first thing we see is when he's accosted by the sailors to say, who are you? Why is this happening? Why are you responsible? He says, I am a Hebrew. I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. That's his claim. He claims to worship the God of heaven. He testifies to God's greatness and his power and to his work in creation. But in verse 3, he's run away. from this God. He's been disobedient to his call. God told him to go and do something, but he went off in the opposite direction. And later on in chapter 4, he explains why. And that he wanted to prevent God from being merciful. He knew God would forgive the people of Nineveh if they repented. He didn't want them to be forgiven, because they could become a threat to his country, as indeed happened. So he didn't want to go. He thought he knew best. God's plan was not a good one, so he didn't want any part in it. So what he says here doesn't match up with his actions. The other thing we find Jonah saying is for the sailors to throw him into the sea. He expected, and they expected, that if they did this, he would die. That was sort of the implicit deal. And so he is effectively calling on them to commit murder, which was against one of the commandments that God had given to his people. So, what picture do we get of Jonah here? Somebody who's running away? Someone who thinks he knows better than God? Somebody who encourages others to go against God's commands? These are not great demonstrations of worship. So in both word and action, he's denying the reality of his claim to worship God. Jonah is not alone. Other people do similar things. Peter, one of the early followers of Jesus, once took Jesus aside and said, "Never, Lord, this shall never happen to you." Jesus has just been explaining to his followers that he was going to suffer, he was going to be killed, he was going to die, and he was going to be restored to life. This did not fit in with Peter's idea of what was right. It was not Peter's plan. So he has the audacity to take Jesus to one side and to put him right. He recognized his lordship in what he says, "Never, Lord," but proceeds to tell him that he is wrong. How does that work? Sometimes people we work for, our leaders, get things wrong, and sometimes it's important for us to point that out. I remember a time when I was working in the IT industry, and I was sitting down at my desk, and I saw an email that my boss had written to some very important people in the company. And I looked at that and I thought, I wish he hadn't said that. Because there was so much wrong with what he said, and some of the implications and consequences were quite significant. And I thought, I need to do something about this. So I wrote a reply to him and to everybody else, carefully pointing out that this is what he actually meant. And he came up to me afterwards and said, thanks for that. That was quite helpful to sort of get him out of quite a difficult position. So yeah, people we work with get things wrong, and sometimes we need to point them out, even if they are in positions of authority over us. But it's different with God. It's different with Jesus. Peter had just come up with a powerful statement of who Jesus was. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And here he's telling this chosen one, this sent one, this Son of God, that he's got it wrong. I wonder how often we manage to do the same thing. To claim that we follow Jesus, to talk about worshipping God, but to want our ideas and our priorities to actually be the things that govern what we do and say. It's easy to look at Jonah, it's easy to look at Peter and see where they got this wrong. But it may be less easy to look at ourselves and see where we are doing similar things. If we claim this morning to recognize the lordship of Christ in our lives, are we actually speaking in line with his character and word? Are we doing what he calls us to do, irrespective of what we might think or want? Are we allowing him to change us and transform us by his Spirit so that our ideas and our thoughts are becoming more and more aligned with his, so that any conflict between them disappears? I mentioned Jonah's statement in verse 9 about worshipping God. And worship is one of these words that we sort of struggle with to know what it means. And one of the things I found in this chapter is that there are four words or phrases that are based on the same underlying term. The word worship, used by Jonah in verse 9, and three that refer to being afraid. Verse 5, they were afraid. Verse 10, they were terrified. Verse 16, they greatly feared. And in some strange way, these terms are related. Another related word is respect. They all come from the same underlying root word. We talk about treating things with respect, such as when they're a bit scary, such as a stormy sea. We talk about worship as a response to someone we respect deeply. It's as though there's a range of meaning and it depends on the situation. And what we see with these sailors is that they are on a roller coaster of emotion that parallels what they're experiencing in the stormy sea. They were terrified of the sea. They were terrified of God. They were amazed at God's power. And this leads them, in verse 16, to a place of worship and sacrifice. God's representative wasn't a great deal of help to them. All he did was bring them into a dangerous situation. But an experience of God's greatness and power spoke to them in a deep and significant way. We sometimes skip over these sailors. We see them as supporting actors. Jonah couldn't have got into the middle of the sea if they weren't sailing the boat, and that's what the sailors did. But they show something of what can happen when people are confronted by the majesty and power of God. And it's worth spending a few moments to look at them a bit more closely. Jonah had been told to go and preach to a group of people who were not part of God's chosen people, to a people who worship different gods, to a people who are seen as outsiders and unclean. And here, amongst these sailors, he finds himself in a group of people just like that. These were typical of the sort of people he would be going to see in Assyria. And we see some fascinating things about these outsiders. Firstly, we see that they are humane people. They care for the lives of other human beings. Even after being told that the only way they could be saved was to murder Jonah, they did everything they could to avoid doing so. Even when Jonah had invited them to do this to him, they held back from committing this terrible act, even though they knew it placed them in danger. Then we see that they have some recognition of some force or presence outside of themselves. When they're in trouble and afraid, verse 5 tells us that they prayed. Yes, they prayed to gods who could not help them. We might question the theology of their prayers, assuming we knew what they prayed, but they prayed. Unlike God's representative who had caused their problems, and we have no record of him praying until things get an awful lot worse. They're very practical people. When the storm came, they were out on the boat. They were throwing things overboard. They were doing everything they could to ensure their safety. This week was the anniversary of the tragic fire at Grenville. And I was listening to a report on that, and I was reminded of the many, many people who heard what was going on and just turned up to help in whatever way they could. They were practical people. And we see that they are open to growing in their relationship with God. They'd learned something about this true God. They got an idea of his power. And they pray to him and they offer sacrifices. We don't know whether this had any long-term impact on their lives. But we do know that in this crisis, these humane, spiritual and practical people prayed and worshipped the Lord. Jonah doesn't come out of this very well, apart from being thrown overboard into a raging storm. He can talk religion. He doesn't seem to be much good at practicing it. In an emergency, he can't be counted on to pray or to act. In fact, he just gives up. And he is also running away from God. And this story challenged me, and I think it challenges us. As people, those of us who believe in Jesus, those of us who seek to follow God, we may see ourselves as insiders, part of God's chosen people. But it might cause us to reflect on how we think about, how we engage with those we might see as outsiders, those who have not yet come to that relationship with Jesus. But those who are in the midst of a crisis might actually do better than we do, might be more open to God acting in a powerful way. How are we in a crisis? How do we see people like the sailors or even the people of Nineveh who were recognised as the enemies of God's people? On Friday evening, Joe and I were around at a couple's house for a meal. As some of you know, our new grandson is in hospital with an infection. And we heard about that while this meal was going on. And we shared it with them. And their immediate and natural response was to pray. That was a real encouragement and blessing. And it made me think, is this how we naturally live and engage? It wasn't what Jonah did, but it's a great example of people who are in tune with and dependent on God. If I, like Jonah, received a command from God to go and preach, to speak to engage with a group of people who, in my opinion, are best left alone, and people who don't deserve God's mercy, how would I respond? You might think, well, surely there aren't people in that category, but we'll think about that in a moment. But if that did happen, would I be obedient or go in the other direction? How would my words and actions speak to the people I came across? What would they say about the God I claim to worship and serve? How about us as a church? How about each of us as individuals? Who, for us, are the people of Nineveh? Is it the oppressive regime in North Korea? Is it the terrorists who operate under the banner of ISIL? Is it our neighbours whose behaviour we find totally unacceptable? Is it people in our own families from whom we are estranged? Are we acting towards them as God would call us to? Have we recognised the implications of the love that God has for the world? John 3 has an amazing verse, speaks about God's love. It says, God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son. This was not just God loving insiders. This wasn't Jesus coming for the few. In fact, Jesus was criticized for the way in which he extended God's love and grace outside of acceptable boundaries and bringing people into God's kingdom who, in the view of the religious authorities, were best left outside. He was criticized for doing that. A recognition of God's power caused these sailors to grow closer to God. We'll see how in the next few weeks about how Jonah gets on, but how about us? If we claim to worship the Lord, the God of heaven, have we forgotten what it means to really worship God, to be obedient to him, and to unquestioningly go where he leads? Have we developed a way of thinking about others that means we are less open to sharing the good news of Jesus Christ with them? Maybe, we might not admit it, but maybe deep down we think they don't really deserve it. If so, there is hope and opportunity. For the two insiders we've thought about this morning, for Jonah and for Peter, they were given opportunities to start again, to be restored, to give another chance to serve God and to minister his grace to others. And that opportunity is also and always available to us if we are prepared, as Jonah does, as Peter did, once again to call out to God, to recognise the authority and supremacy of Jesus, and to be prepared to align ourselves with what he is doing and what he calls us to do. Or we say we're going to be like Jonah. Will we go in the opposite direction? Will we argue? Or will we seek and pray to be obedient. We're going to leave Jonah in the sea for now. We'll see what happens to him next week. But we'll also leave ourselves with the question as to how we respond to God when he calls us to do something for him.